A little nervous on Friday afternoon as I was going to attend my first driveway clatch, as we all get together on a driveway safely 6 feet apart from each other and talk about the week we had. It's going to be the first of its kind for me anyway, and I didn't know how it was going to go, and then I heard the noise outside my front steps in the apartments out front, and I saw there was already a coffee clatch underway, three generations of families talking at a safe social distance. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent on the morning show on the Ideas Network, and we're going to spend the next hour talking frankly about family, relationships, and suddenly finding ourselves isolated, some of us with and some of us without our significant others. So how do we nurture our most important relationships right now? How do we manage our own fear and anxiety, and while looking right into the eyes of the ones we love? This is all very new for all of us, and I'm very curious and can't help but ask about what you've been going through at 1-800-642-1234. If you'd like to share, you can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. And our guest is here to help. Shyler McGain's a distinguished psychologist at UW Health. She has a specialization in couples and family therapy. And Shyler, thank you for joining us this morning. Have you attended one of those driveway clatches yet?
I'm not yet, but it's on my it's one of my Corona goals to do in the next couple of weeks.
How are you coping?
Well, it is a challenging time for everyone, but I've been really impressed with the way that UW Health and other medical centers have really rallied to provide innovative, creative care. I personally have transitioned my practice to a telehealth practice, along with most other behavioral health specialists, and part of my personal coping is taking a daily walk with my puppy and doing paint nights online. Last night I took a class by an instructor out in New Jersey, and she had 46 people on the class, and we're all painting, and it was a great way to make strangers into friends and do something creative.
There are connections to be had out there at this time of isolation, which sounds like a contrast, but really it seems to speak to the opportunity, perhaps.
It does, both in the workplace, in terms of your neighborhood, but especially in the family. I'm finding over and over my clients are talking about how there's this opportunity to have space to really be present with their kids, to nurture their relationship with their partners, and just get back to some of those basics that make life meaningful and worthwhile.
Meanwhile, so much can get in the way of that, Shyla, in any given day. And let's start with, you know, for many, job loss. 2 weeks ago, more than 3 million Americans filed for unemployment. The numbers from this past week are not expected to be any better. So you've got all these folks who have lost so much so fast. And regardless of the outside world, losing an income is one of the most traumatic events for any family. So, Shyla, how do you begin to cope with newfound joblessness during a near national quarantine?
There is a sense of collective grief, I think, around that, and many people are frightened, and it's heartbreaking when that livelihood is taken away and it wasn't something that you had planned for. What I'm seeing is people are really being resourceful and, you know, finding whether they're applying for unemployment or finding potentially some other sources of income. I've seen people get really creative in transitioning their practice into, or their job into more of a video platform. And then I've seen neighbors helping one another, whether it's providing food or offering to take care of the kids while one spouse can work. And so I think, you know, we're really living in a time where we have to work as a collective to solve this pandemic. We can't figure it out alone, and it's really an opportunity to ask for help when you need it.
As a collective, because we're all dealing with this at the same time. We're all going through this together. But I'll go back to my own driveway clatch on Friday for a moment. And again, it was three generations of family all socially distancing from each selves and talking and enjoying. And it was really wonderful until it got time to go. And Grandma, my mother, got up to give hugs and quickly realized there were no hugs to give for the first time in her life, which I could see broke her heart and then broke mine. How do we overcome that social distancing, even though we are so close, Shyla?
And you really speak to the benefits of hugs, that, you know, giving a hug for 20 seconds can release all those beneficial chemicals that can help us stay resilient to stress. So there is a way that, you know, grandparents aren't able to be able to see in person grandkids for fear of spreading COVID-19. But I think what you were speaking to is just getting really creative of how you're connecting. For example, one of my friends, her son is playing online video games with his cousins because his cousins all of a sudden have more free time. I know people are going to various platforms where they're doing group chats. They're having your book club meet in a creative way. So I think now is the time to become more connected than not. And that is the one thing that the virus can touch, is our innate capacity for compassion and kindness and caring, and just really being proactive with setting up regular connections. And virtually, you know, we live in a time where we can, in just a press of a button, connect with somebody around the world and see their face. And I think when we can see each other's faces and read those nonverbals, that really helps us kind of bridge this time of difficulty.
Our guest is Shelly Morgain. She is a distinguished psychologist at UW Health, and she works with couples and families in therapy. And interested in hearing what it's like being stuck at home where you are this morning at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Anecdotally, Shyla, is when you talk about the obstacles to getting the most out of your relationships right now, I am seeing stories that therapists are making more time or have more time because of telehealth and because of telecommuting, that there are opportunities for couples who are seeking help out there right now.
Absolutely, and I would really encourage it. And you can do it from the comfort of your own home. And some interesting findings came out of China that as the COVID-19 cases began to subside in China and people were able to go out again, there was a reported surge in divorce filings. We don't want that to be the case for our nation. And we have, you know, some of the world-renowned experts in couples therapy out there with, Dr. John Gottman has a wonderful website with resources, as well as, you know, there are therapists and psychologists and counselors that are providing telehealth that can really help you navigate this difficult time if you're struggling.
Well, how would you check yourself that way then? What's your sort of checklist to go down to find out whether or not you should seek help?
I find that with people now being safer at home and being with your spouse 24/7, that if you have a strong foundation, it actually strengthens that relationship. But for many people, maybe they've grown a bit more distant or leading separate lives, and that can allow some resentment to surface that you want to be able to clear. And so, you might do what was part of some of my research in graduate school, which was a marriage checkup. With Dr. James Cordova, who basically brought couples into the lab and did a little checkup on their relationship. And we looked at how close do you feel? Are you enjoying the time you're spending? What are some of those areas of disagreement that keep coming up and over again? Are you resolving them? How many positive interactions are you having to every negative interaction? And then what we would do is some emotion coaching or some emotion skills. And again, whether or not you're coming in for a session or doing a telehealth session, I think it's a great opportunity to check up on the status of your relationship or marriage and then actually proactively work on it. We have space and time that we can really strengthen these relationships, and some simple skills can just help.
Shyla Morgain is a distinguished psychologist at UW Health. She holds therapy sessions with couples and families, and she is our guest for the hour as we discuss relationships during a pandemic. And I would be interested to hear what it's like for you at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Have you considered pitching a tent in the backyard to get away yet, or as away as you can get as we all stay safe? I guess it's come up, huh? 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent today. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You know, the first Monday of March felt like just like any other Monday. You drag the kids to school, you drag yourself to work, you check your messages, maybe sit through a meeting, fake your way to lunch. There was a routine and a rhythm to a Monday that always used to feel a little bit reluctant. Today is the last Monday of March, and very little, if anything, feels the same. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network, and I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent today. The changes over the past month, most definitely disruptive, but in that disruption, perhaps an opportunity to see each new day differently, even a Monday. Maybe today a little less reluctance? What do you see? Taking your calls this hour at 1-800-642-1234 or your emails at ideas@wpr.org with our guest, Shyla Mergane, who is a distinguished psychologist at UW Health. And Shyla, we had a call from Tom in Milwaukee. He says that you mentioned an increase in divorce rates in China. He wants to know, why is that so negative? He says maybe people are realizing they need to change their lives.
I think that's a great point. Not every relationship is going to survive, and not every relationship is meant to be for life. However, you know, if we don't want it to be just because we're not practicing specific skills to really strengthen our relationships.
You mentioned that marriage checklist. What about a self checklist? What are some of the things we should be aware of in our own behavior? And I bring this up, Shyla, because I recognized this on Friday with the driveway clutch. I was able to maintain all my patience, and I was kind, and I was generous to my family. But strangers on the road look out for me. For some reason, I was an angry driver. So it was a checklist for myself. And how would you run down that list?
Oh, and that's a great point, just safer driving. So nothing's really prepared us for working from home, having take your child to work day every single day, and being in close proximity with your spouse and having your spouse or partner become your coworker. So the first thing we want to really explore is, are we getting enough personal time? Are we having enough space to be able to do our work, carving out separate workspaces? In terms of self-care, are we getting enough sleep? Are we eating well? Are we moving our body? How are we managing stress and some of those distressing emotions that are arising? How are we building that social support above and beyond just our family unit? And one of the things when I talk about this collective grief that we're all going through is meaning-making and purpose. You know, one of the things that really helps us stay resilient is to focus on how we can make a difference, or how we can help, or what is one thing I can make meaning of out of this difficult situation. And when we can start to have some clarity around that, that really becomes that northern star. But when we're, again, looking at that personal checklist, you know, it comes back to the home base. And we want that home base to be strong and stable, because that's a foundation. If everyone's a little off or everyone's stressed, that's going to just amplify, and no one's going to have well-being in the home.
We all handle stress differently, Shyla. And, how do we support the rest of our family when they're stressed in the different ways that they are? And how do we best express our own anxiety?
Yeah, so when I think about in a romantic relationship, it's important to commit to communicating and really speak up when you're reaching that breaking point. I've had couples really rate themselves of one, hey, I'm doing great, I have a lot of energy, to three, you know, I'm like a pressure cooker about to explode. And when you can communicate that from a one to three, then you get a sense of your own bandwidth and your partner's bandwidth. And in that, then you can take shifts. If you have young kids at home, or even teenagers, teenagers might also want to do that one to three as well with you. But you can take shifts so that if you need to take a break, then your partner can step in. And I've even seen this done via video chat, and the grandparents or aunt and uncles are taking a shift with the kids via, you know, an online platform where they can video chat. And then when you take that space, I encourage people to get outside. It's springtime in Wisconsin. There are a lot of beautiful locations close to home. Just taking a walk around the block can help you cool off. And I think the last point is, we as adults, we really want to regulate our emotions so we're not passing them on inadvertently to kids. Kids really pick up anxiety and fear, and we don't want them to worry unnecessarily. So I encourage parents to take a pause, you know, go outside, or even just do a brief breathing practice or mindfulness meditation practice to self-regulate when you go in to talk with your kids. You know, you don't want your kids to see you anxious, and you certainly don't want your kids to see you picking a fight with your spouse. Better to The famous couples researcher, Dr. John Gottman, talked about he and his wife would have arguments in the bathroom and close the door so the kids wouldn't see. And so if nothing else, we can always retreat to the bathroom as kind of to re-regulate and then come back out and rejoin the family.
Bathroom fights, I would be interested in knowing. 1-800-642-1234. Our guest is Shyla Mergain, distinguished psychologist at UW Health, and we're taking a look at relationships up close and personal. And it is an interesting point about disputes or arguments or debates that you may have in close quarters. We're going to have these with our significant others. And are there techniques we can use to stop them before they get out of hand? Are there communication measures we can take to take a break? Is don't forget to breathe the starting point in all of this, Shyla?
It is. I call it the adult timeout, taking a minute or two to cool off till you can think more clearly and see your partner's perspective. We also don't want to engage in some of the more destructive ways of in conversation that Dr. Gottman calls the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Communicating contempt or criticism, becoming overly defensive or stonewalling. Instead, I really encourage, as we're taking that break, to really seek to understand and be a bit gracious during this time. Be a little more patient. You know, everyone's doing the best they can, and your partner or your child may not be reacting to this in the same way that you are, and that's okay. Everyone's going to have a wide range of reactions. Research shows that the healthiest relationships have a 5-to-1 ratio of 5 positive interactions to every negative. And so in addition to just being more patient with your loved ones, I really encourage you to amplify those small positive things. You know, I think right now it's really about the details. Say thank you a lot more. Say please. Make your loved one a lunch and bring it to him or her. Do a kind gesture like a pat on the back or saying you're doing a good job, showing that appreciation. We find that, you know, that if we can compliment, not criticize, and get curious, not furious, that's going to really be some of the glue that's going to bond us together and really help us all get through this challenging time together, working as a team.
What about lingering resentments? What about the old fights? What about things that came up long before the coronavirus was even a thing we had to think about? How do you deal with those things that may still linger in the background, Shyla?
Lee, that's such a great question. And I would say that there's an opportunity here to have those things arise and then clear them. You know, if you spend enough time with somebody cloistered indoors, those things are going to arise, like little weeds coming up. And so the first thing is to, if they're coming up, schedule a time to talk about them. Usually in the moment isn't the best. Again, you want to cool off and really think about what was upsetting, what was hurtful, what the resentment's really about. And then when you approach that discussion, use I messages. We often get into the defensive you. You never, you always, you didn't, versus I. And if you can couch it in terms of the feeling underneath it, you know, I felt this, you know, this is my experience, and this is how I experienced it and felt about it. And then just doing some active listening. The best thing you can do is, instead of getting into an argument or trying to defend your position, again, just seek to understand, sharing, kind of paraphrasing back what that other person, what that other person's experience was. And we find that if we can approach it with this more constructive way, often what people really need is to express the impact it had on them. And when a person can really verbalize that, then it all of a sudden starts to shift. And research shows in intimacy and intimate safety, intimacy is fostered not necessarily by all the good times and all the fun we've had, but it's when you can verbalize something that's quite vulnerable and have the other person simply say, wow, I'm so sorry. You know, I didn't realize that it impacted you that way. Just being almost a mirror and validating, then that's where that closeness and intimacy arises. And that's what strengthens our relationships. And that is, again, this opportunity that we have to really, you know, to really grow closer during this time. And maybe that's part of the silver lining of this experience. And I've seen over and over again in my practice, as I was saying earlier, couples are growing closer, families are growing closer. I'm really getting back to the heart of what it means to be human, to love and care for one another.
So there's this anxiety, and we're all going through it because there have been some drastic changes in our habits, our routines, the things that we used to rely on just to get us through a Monday like this. All of a sudden are not there. But what is still there are the ones we love, our family and our friends, and the ones we come together with, even if coming together may not mean what it used to mean. And yet what I hear you say, Shyla, over and over again is opportunity, an opportunity for new routines, for new rhythms, new habits, for even new relationships at this time of social distancing. And I'm curious about how people in Wisconsin are handling this change that we're going through at 800-642-1234. We've got the news next, and then you and our guest, Shyla Merghain, who works at UW Health as a distinguished psychologist, and she works with families and couples through therapy, and she'll take your questions, your comments after the news. You're listening to The Morning Show, and I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent. This is The Ideas Network. Shonda Rhimes is the TV mogul responsible for Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, and on the first day home with her children, she had this to report. I'm quoting, "Been homeschooling a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old for 1 hour and 11 minutes. Teachers deserve to make $1 billion a year, or a week." It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent. And are kids a part of this new equation for you? And how are you coping? How about them? 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Shyla Merghain is a distinguished psychologist at UW Health. She has a specialization in couples and family therapy. We talked about arguments earlier, Shyla, and moving them to the bathroom so the kids don't hear, but I get the sense that kids can pick up on a lot of things. And when you put them into an equation of isolation inside the household, it certainly can change the dynamic. So how do you see the coronavirus changing the family dynamics for mom, dad, and kids?
As I said earlier, nothing prepared us to have every day be the take your child to work day. And for those working families, especially two-parent households that are working, both partners, that it can be quite an adjustment. And we're really having to be creative and adaptive in this time. But I think families do best when they start to create a new normal and create a new structure around the day. For those parents who are working, it's really important to carve out some space and almost physical space in your zone, in your house, having almost different zones, whether it's one person gets the office, one person gets the kitchen table, and start to really have some rules or guidelines around this is work time, this is school time, this is play time, to that firm structure can really help.
I'm your parent. I'm your teacher. Homeschooling, this brand new stressor for families, not just parents either, kids too. How do you begin to manage our emotions as you get to these new levels of experiences with family members?
Absolutely. And you're probably the principal too, I would say, in that, right? And so I think the first is to really keep lines of communication open with your kids. And it has to be age appropriate, but talk about the expectations that you have. Talk about the structure of the school day. Really enlist teachers' help as well for some accountability. If kids are older, you might also connect with their friends so that friends are supporting your kids in terms of getting work done in a timely way. And then you might take shifts. You know, I think about working couples, and maybe you have a really important call that you have to take for work, but your spouse can then make sure that the kids are on track with their schoolwork, and then you might flip it. So trying to solidify that schedule is going to be important. And then you might also have to communicate with your workplaces that your workflow might look a little different. I know a friend of mine has a young child at home, and she's having to do some, especially if a child isn't in school, is more in daycare, then that friend is having to do a lot of childcare during the day. So her work output tends to be later at night when the child's in bed.
What about teens, rebellious teenagers? They're probably pushing back a little bit to begin with, and now we're in the closest confines imaginable, stuck at home, no escape. How should other family members deal with the feelings of having a teenager in the house, and how can a teen best deal with their own feelings?
And you think of the developmental tasks of teenagers, which is to push away from parents and really promote their autonomy and independence, which is the opposite of what's being asked right now. And so at the same time, that child can really start to break away from the family while still at home, whether it's maybe more time in their room or maybe creating some social time with their friends or even, again, just going outside in the backyard or taking a walk around the block, creating additional space for that teen just to be with his or her thoughts and staying connected with their friends through social media or through classroom chats and things like that is going to be very important.
We've made a checklist for our marriage. We've made a checklist for ourselves. How do we run down a checklist for our children?
Well, kids have a lot of questions. You know, they've heard a lot either from the news or from friends. And so you want to really monitor their stress level or anxiety level. You want to really remind them that they're safe, that you're the adult, and you will do everything within your power to keep them safe. But then you want to just look for daily mood. You know, if they're starting to do behaviors like they're having difficulty sleeping or they're not eating or they're starting to withdraw, they might just need some extra attention. And really scheduling some one-on-one time with the parent, so each parent takes one-on-one time with the child, is going to be really important.
Just the parent and the child, or does there have to be some sort of a prop? Does there need to be an excuse, or is it just blocking away time and that's all we need?
You know, often what kids just want is your undivided attention, and so I encourage people to let the child take the lead, you know, of really coming up with, if they're old enough, coming up with their own tasks that they'd be interested in, coming up with maybe some activities, or just getting creative. You know, there are a lot of YouTube videos out there with certain tasks you can learn or hobbies you can do. I think those things can be helpful.
I am getting lots of tips on macaroni and cheese from my niece, so good to get those videos coming in, and I will certainly try the extra butter that she recommends. Shyla Mergain works with families and couples as a distinguished psychologist at UW Health, and we're taking a look at our old relationships becoming new again in many ways during this pandemic, and interested in hearing from you and answering any questions you might have with our guest at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. What about socializing for our children? What kind of a role do parents now play in making sure that our kids are connecting with their peers? Shyla?
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think, you know, if you can think about teenagers and what they're doing, it's going to be important for them to, you know, stay connected in ways. And maybe they can be the ones really encouraging other teenagers to doing things for the community. I think this is a great time for parents and to really show how they can make a difference. You know, maybe they're donating money to a relief fund. Maybe they're sending thank you cards to grocery workers or healthcare providers, really showing how we can work together as a community.
Shyla, you talk about this innate human desire to find meaning, meaning making and purpose, and that would certainly apply for our kids as well. How can we help them in direction, in vision, in finding that? And you sort of mentioned it here, but I think the potential is there for meaning making for our kids and purpose in this time and with the time we have with them.
Lee, you know, this is, if you think about, you know, 20 years from now, what do we want our family narrative to be about during this time? You know, if we want our grandkids or great-grandkids to look back at us as their ancestors, how would we want to really navigate this time? And I think, again, when we focus on making a difference, and kids can make a difference, you know, one of the things I've seen trending right now are kids are adopting grandparents, just an elderly neighbor.
Yes.
Or, you know, a friend of a friend or somebody maybe in assisted living that can't leave the house. And maybe that child is kind of adopting that senior citizen and spending time once a week connecting with them or even creating something that they're mailing to them. And I think there can be some really good life lessons around that.
Another age group that may be feeling anxiety and stress right about now are high school seniors and other young adults who are getting ready to leave the nest, live on their own before this pandemic upended everything. So there were plans that were interrupted, lives that were interrupted. What can families do to help work through those feelings of frustration and find some way to get back on track somehow?
And these seniors were born right after 9/11.
Oh.
So that's, you know, pretty profound when you think about how they came into the world and now this rite of passage to be graduating from high school that, yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of sense of loss that it's supposed to be their glory, you know, year or glory months of prom and graduation and all those parties. And even, you know, college is a little bit up in the air. Will we be back in session in the regular way, or will we be going into online learning? Plus, some families are really worried about financially, you know, the nest egg they had saved in investments has definitely dwindled significantly in the last month. And so, but yet, you know, I think that the future really is on the shoulders of these young people, college seniors or younger kids. And so in some ways they're having to grow up more quickly, you know, in terms of seeing kind of the, you know, what the state of the world. But I also think, you know, there's this opportunity for them to really get excited about their mission, their purpose. I see a lot of young people getting even more serious about their studies, saying, you know, I'm needed. You know, my interests, my skills, my abilities are needed right now. And again, just to be really resilient and creative of how you're approaching things.
We are, whether we recognize it or not, I imagine, developing new habits as we speak with all the old routines upended. How do we take care in building new habits, Shyla?
Well, if you look at the science of habit, it can take upwards of 60 days to create a new habit. We tend to be creatures of old habits, going back to our old ways. And so I encourage people to just start small. You know, if you think about, okay, this is a new normal, I'm creating new habits. What is, you know, one thing I can do that can really move me in the direction of my health so I'm really keeping my immune system strong? What is one thing I can do to create a sense of meaning and purpose? What is one thing I can do to really show somebody I care, especially in that family unit with my spouse, my kids? And often when we start our day with asking those three questions, that can provide some framework or at least know which direction or which lane we should be traveling in during our day.
Would you repeat those three questions, please?
Yeah, sure. You know, we think about what is one thing I can do for my health? What is one thing I can do to create a sense of meaning or purpose? And what is one thing I can do to show that I care, that compassion and kindness towards another, especially with our family unit, but just in the larger community? Mm. And again, those can be kind of guiding lights. And I think about this, we all have the lane that we're walking in.
Yeah.
You know, even a young child can do something really meaningful, and especially kids, just I think part of their purpose is just to make us laugh. So they're in the moment, they're spontaneous.
Shyla Mergain, distinguished psychologist at UW Health, specializing in couples and family therapy, and we will return to her in 2 minutes. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer-Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. You've probably seen the old quote from Mr. Rogers about looking for the helpers during scary times. His mother famously told him, "You will always find people who are helping." It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer-Kent. And while the streets may be empty, there is no shortage of helpers out there. This coronavirus, insidious in its ability to make it feel like it's nowhere and everywhere at the same time. But I take heart in feeling the same way about the immense capacity and commitment to help right now. In discomfort and quiet of a quarantine, unlimited offers to assist are just about everywhere you look. So what are you seeing where you are in Wisconsin this morning? Taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Our guest for the hour, Shyla Mergain, works at UW Health as a distinguished psychologist. Shyla, elementary and even middle school aged kids in the family are dealing with new feelings, new fears of the unknown. What can we do to help?
I think kids are quite nervous during this time. And I think, you know, again, trying to create some sort of just in the moment time, whether you're playing, whether you're creative, whether you're baking something, any kind of semblance of normal. Kids really need to feel like kids right now. Teens really need to feel like teens right now. And so, you know, it could even feel like a little bit of an adventure. Like, what do we want to experience as a family during this? And also maybe working towards one project together. I had a friend who found videos on YouTube, painting videos or drawing videos, and she had her entire family draw a female face one night and then a male face one night. I've seen people create lots of interesting recipes together as a family. I've seen sons and fathers and daughters and fathers do a lot of woodworking projects during this time. So anything just to create some semblance of normal for kids is going to be helpful. A friend of mine brought out a puzzle she hadn't seen. She got when she was married, before she was married over 20 years ago. That was like a 1,000-piece puzzle, and it was still in its box and wrapper, and said, well, I guess this is a good time to finally get to that puzzle. So just getting really creative. I think, I'm finding a lot of people are saying, gosh, you know, this is hard, it's stressful, but there is this way. We're just really being present with one another. Life in many ways has gotten a lot of simpler.
So it feels as though,
I
felt like, their time was just the most valuable thing, and I just running out of time at all times, just not enough time. And then a couple of weeks ago, it felt like all of a sudden there is this time and this question about what do you do with it? And all the different times we felt like we were running out of time or didn't have the time, those are all the things I think of all of a sudden now that we have it. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, and we as a culture have gotten into just being so busy, doing all these activities and tasks. And certainly a lot of kids are behind screens a lot, that I encourage people to minimize how much kids are on screens, because they're going to have to be on it for telelearning. But kids have an innate capacity for creativity, right? have them in the backyard with that unstructured time. They'll come up with something. And in that, they will maybe that create inner spark of creativity, innovation will start to ignite that, those of us who are older remember, with this having that unstructured time in the backyard, building forts and looking at bugs and getting in trouble or, inside, coloring or crafting and kids, I think this generation of kids, they haven't had that. And there's something to that, because in that space, we start to listen to ourselves in a deeper way. We start to hear our inner guidance. And I often think that's really where these innovative ideas come from, when we have that spaciousness. And that's how we'll problem solve, how to get through this together.
Shyla Mergain specializes in couples and family therapy. She's distinguished psychologist at UW Health. Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Bev in Prairie Farm, you're on the Ideas Network. Good morning.
Yes, sir. My question concerns how do we handle situations where elderly folks are in care and nursing homes and rehab centers. They are cut off from their families, and they have no one to visit, and pretty well told to stay in their rooms so that they haven't got contact with one another in case someone does have the virus.
So important, Bev, and I'm so glad you asked the question. Shyla, what can we do?
Oh, Bev, I'm really glad you brought that up, because we haven't talked about that aspect that many people are dealing with, that their weekly visit to their maybe grandparent or mom or dad is been taken away. And, especially if the person isn't living on the ground floor where you could go outside their window and wave. I've seen people do that, that you don't actually get to see them. You don't get to touch them. You can't really evaluate how they're doing. At the same time, again, we go back to our technology. I've seen people do a phone call or video call, and just trying to keep regular tabs that way. And also talking with the staff, seeing how they're doing. You're often having to rely on other people's reports during this time. And if you're able to, even sending a letter or a card, I think that would be something that they would really appreciate, just to show that they're on your mind and you care.
We spent a lot of time talking about couples and families this morning, but what about individuals who live alone already and now are self-isolating? What can they do to maintain their mental health, Shyla?
You know, we already have as a nation a lot of loneliness in our culture. And one of the stress responses can be to isolate, to retreat, to withdraw. And that's actually one of the worst things we can do during this time. Instead, it's really important to reach out to people, whether it's, you know, friendships. I've seen a lot of people reconnect with old friends that they haven't talked to in years. It could be connecting with a neighbor, or again, with our technology, there are various groups out there that are going virtual, and even connecting with strangers that might have similar interests or are like-minded. But it's one of the best things we can do for physiology and emotional health and overall well-being is to keep connected, keep talking, keep reaching out for one another.
Well, maybe that's why I was driving angry on Friday, Shyla, is because going back to this meaning-making and purpose mm-hmm. that is innate in all of us and the immense amount of help that's out there. There's also an immense amount of frustration about bridging that gap between the help that is needed and the help that is out there. In order to, love others, you got to take the time to go down your own checklist. How can we deal with our own frustrations and anxieties in ways that are productive and not taking it out on others?
Yeah, I think about it as an inner thermometer of knowing when you're reaching that breaking point, and to catch it early. And also, so catching it early and doing something that's calming and relaxing to the system. Also, just doing daily self-care. So one of the best things we can do is exercise, especially now trying to get outside and exercise. Also, a daily relaxation, meditation, quieting practice. Something as simple as noticing, taking a break if you're starting to rev up and get overwhelmed and anxious. Noticing five things around you, hearing four things, touching three things, smelling two things, and tasting one thing. That kind of thing grounds you in the moment and reestablishes a sense of safety. So I think, regular movement, obviously sleep and nutrition, but a little bit of mindfulness or relaxation can help. Just because in the moment, we're often okay, even if it's tough and it's overwhelming and we have a lot of stress, but in the moment, we're safe. And if we can bring ourselves back into the moment, often then we reconnect with that innate wisdom that can guide us to figure out what step do I need to take? What action can I take? What's really asked of me right now that will serve myself and serve others? So we can bring our best selves forward, to our, in our own life and to our families. And we can provide that leadership for others.
Shyla Mergane, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. It's been an honor.
Shyla is a distinguished psychologist at UW Health. She has a specialization in couples and family therapy. Just ahead, On Point, as the pandemic worsens across the globe, NPR examines what it's like to grieve and manage loss right now. Find out how people are coping. That's coming up after the news. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.